From the Triangle Radio Reading Service in Raleigh, North Carolina, this is Dick Hayden, and it's time to connect to success. On Connect to Success, we explore ways through which one can pursue their own success by learning from others. We do this through interviews with and reading articles about people who are visually impaired and who have achieved success in their lives. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Connect to success. What does that mean? Connect is pretty straightforward. It is joining two or more things together. Success is broader, yet very personal. It can be as simple as completing a single task or as complex as accomplishing a multi-part long-term goal. It's all about hope, imagination, and resilience. It's being open to what is possible. And it's personal because it is what you decide is most important to you. During today's program, we will be speaking with Sarah McManus, Ph.D., an amazing person committed to quality education for the visually and hearing impaired communities. We will explore with her how one can connect to success through education. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you, Dick, for having me today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you here. I think you have some wonderful information to share with our listeners.
I'm excited.
Sarah, to begin with, would you be willing to share with our listeners how your journey to this role began and how it unfolded in terms of your educational background and career roles? In other words, what kind of drove you in this direction?
Okay. Well, you know, I'm working as the digital learning director for the Education Services for the Deaf and Blind at the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction. And so as the digital learning director, I serve three schools. I serve the Governor Moorhead School for the Blind, the North Carolina School for the Deaf in Morganton, and the Eastern North Carolina School for the Deaf in Wilson. And I have been working with the Department of Public Instruction for over 20 years. And so my journey has been kind of long to get where I am. I actually have kind of move in different directions about every 3 years because I have lots of interests. Before I came to the department, I was a teacher. I was a math teacher, actually.
Really?
And the first encounter that I had with a visually impaired student was actually in college. I was teaching over at North Carolina State University, and I had a college student in my class, and he was visually impaired, and I was teaching him mathematics. And so that was a very interesting experience because in my undergraduate work, they didn't really prepare me for that. So it was really on-the-job learning of how to make sure that the student who was visually impaired, he was actually blind and couldn't see, and I had to learn to teach him graphing. So that was very interesting.
Oh, my heavens, I can't imagine how you would do that.
Well, you have to have props and things, raised lines, and I used spaghetti noodles to help with some of it. But it was a very interesting experience, and he really taught me that when you teach, you have to teach for all students. So that was very empowering for me. But as a math teacher in high school, when I taught high school, I didn't have any visually impaired students, but I, you know, taught math, and one thing that I did feel that was really important was really making sure students knew where they were each and every day in my class, and that I really assessed them each and every day, not formally with a quiz or anything like that, but just really being in tune to what they were doing in my class and making sure they understood the material. When I did go to the Department of Public Instruction, I started in testing. And in testing, which is the end of course tests and end of grade tests, some of you have probably heard of those.
Yes, we have. Yes, we have.
And I know everybody says there's too much testing. But one thing that I did like about the testing was that at the end of the year, it would show what my students actually knew. And when students weren't successful, you know, you could always always look at the data and figure out, you know, what maybe went wrong, what didn't go well that year. So it really was helpful to use after the fact. But the type of testing that I really valued was that day-to-day type of testing. As a State Department person with testing, one of my roles and one thing that I felt very passionate about was working with the accommodations for students with disabilities. My responsibility was to make sure that students with disabilities had the accommodations that they needed, and any adjustments to the test booklets that we needed to make, we needed to make sure we did those. So we spent a lot of time looking at large print. Some of you may have seen a large print test book for a student, and they're really large and they cover a lot of space. But we spent a lot of time trying to figure out, you know, what size font we were going to use, what kind of font were we going to use. Were we going to use the sans serif or the serif, where you have the, and I think we settled on Arial because it was the type of print that students could read the best. And so, you know, we spent a lot of time on that, making sure that there were color overlays for students who needed a cover overlay for test booklets was something we worked really hard on. And then as we started to go to online testing, we started thinking about what those accommodations needed to be. I enjoyed working in testing, but, you know, I wanted to switch. I wanted to do something different. So I did a little bit with policy. And so you probably heard of a test administrator's manual and all the directions that have to be said at the beginning of the test.
Oh, yes.
So not only did I work with the accommodations and the print booklets, I also worked with the policies. And so my staff was responsible for writing those directions and making sure those directions were out there and that everybody had to be trained every year on how to make sure those directions were followed. So that was something that I worked on. And in that role as well, I worked with the U.S. Department of Education because we had to make sure we audited schools to make sure they were giving students their accommodations. And so we would had a team of folks that would go out to the schools and look at all the IEPs in that particular school and make sure that the accommodations that were in the IEP were also given to the students on their assessment. So we were in the monitoring business as well. As we started moving forward, I started getting really interested in formative assessment, and when I worked on my doctorate, that was my research topic. And so I started really focused on the classroom type assessment and the formative assessment that I felt was really powerful. And the research behind that is really, really strong. That shows that, you know, formative assessment in the classroom, that day-to-day formative assessment is very powerful in terms of raising student achievement, and it can actually raise a student's achievement on an end of course or end of grade type assessment by one standard deviation, which is huge for growth within 1 year. So I started working on that, and so I had this kind of dichotomy in my life. I was working on the formative assessment piece for professional development in my research and my doctorate, and then I was working on state tests. And so it was kind of like, how do I combine these kind of together? And so as a state, we started working on, you know, a comprehensive balanced approach to assessment. And we actually got some race to the top dollars that came out where we could actually work on some online professional development. And so one of the projects through the Race to the Top grant was to create an Instructional Improvement System, or an IIS. And so I started looking at that and seeing, okay, it brings together professional development, it brings together formative assessment and, you know, the end of grade assessments. And so I thought this might be a really good fit for me. And so I started in that particular role being in charge of the Instructional Improvement System, which now is called Homebase. So some of you may have heard about Homebase.
Home-based.
Yeah. So that's where you have your student information system, so your attendance comes through Homebase, the grades, the transcripts, all of that comes through PowerSchool, which is part of Homebase. When I first started, it was just the Instructional Improvement System, so it was one piece. And then as we started working more collaboratively with other groups that had Race to the Top dollars, it became a lot larger. So Homebase became the name for, it's kind of like Microsoft. You know, Microsoft Office has Word, it has Excel, it has
PowerPoint, many parts.
Yeah. So Homebase is like the overall piece, and then you have all the parts mm-hmm. underneath. And so that was really nice. We were working on that collaboratively as a group, and that rolled out, and Race to the Top dollars went away. And so it was like, well, what am I going to do now? I've gone from teaching to testing to policy to working on the Instructional Improvement System. What is next? And so when ESDB schools needed some help in digital learning, I said, that could be something that I could help with. And so talked with Barbria. We talked about it. The Barbria is the superintendent for all three schools and the director for the Governor Moorhead School. And she gave me a nice tour of the campus, and we had a long conversation. And so it was like, yeah, I think this is where I need to be. So it kind of just brought everything back together. You know, I have a lot of interest, and I have a lot of passion for making sure students with disabilities get what they need. I had a passion for learning in the digital age, a passion for assessment, a passion for instruction, and so it all just seemed to fit together. And so my journey has been a very probably unusual one for some people might think, because I didn't come straight out and think about, you know, working in digital learning, because at that time, who knew what digital learning was?
Didn't exist.
It didn't exist. And then working with visually impaired students and deaf students wasn't something that was on my radar either. But you know, here I am, and I'm excited, and I'm happy, and I'm working towards making sure that the students who are deaf and hard of hearing and the students who are blind or visually impaired have the best education they possibly can have, and that they have the resources that they need, and that they're successful beyond high school.
I'm not going to ask you how old you are, but
please don't.
No, that's right. What did you set out to do at the age of 18 coming out of high school? In other words, you went on to college. Was your pursuit of your bachelor's degree in math or education?
Psychology.
Okay, I got that figured out. Psychology.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to take a leap here now. With your master's degree, was it in math, education, or psychology?
Math education.
Okay. I thought you were going to give me a fourth one here. Math education.
Yes. And so math education was my passion. I just, after thinking about psychology and some other things. And at one point, I wanted to be a brain surgeon. I wanted to be a lawyer. So, you know, when you first go to college, you don't really need to know where you're going to end up. You just have
I wanted to be in the NBA, but...
Did you? Oh.
Yeah, but at 5'7", there's not much
not
hope.
Not much hope.
No, not hope. Not much, no.
So I just, you know, my passion is education. And so I'm a lifelong learner. And I believe in when the opportunities are there for you, you take a chance and you go for it and you work hard and you find the resources to surround yourself with good people. And as long as you can Google and find information that you need and know how to go to the library and do some research and use the book stacks, you'll be okay.
And your doctorate is in?
It's math education.
Math education as well. I have a hunch that as you were pursuing these different educational levels, these accomplishments, that some things just sort of sparked you in this area or that area, and that's kind of what has continued on through your career.
Yes.
See something interesting and say,
hey,
why
not?
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? That's great. I'm not sure I would have made it as a math major.
No?
No, I can count, but I'm limited. Sarah, what would some of the aspects or the resources from the schools that you deal with, both for the visually impaired and for those who have a hearing impairment, that our adult listeners might be able to tap into for assistance in their lives? I don't know if there is anything or
not,
but are those schools focused just for the minor individual, you know, in terms of age, the grade school, high school, et cetera?
Yes, the focus is mainly on the K-12 students. There are always adult services that also are available, like the at the State Department level. And so there are adult services for the hard of hearing and then also for the blind and visually impaired.
Are any of those in the instructional area, educationally oriented?
They do teach, especially for the visually impaired. I'm very familiar with that particular area because they're actually on our campus. The Division of Services for the Blind is on the Governor Moorhead School campus, and so they share facilities. And so they teach adults how to navigate. So if there's older adults that are going blind, they would be able to get services in their home to show how they can organize their home so that they can navigate a little bit easier. There are services for Braille. If they are going to go to work and they need some Braille assistance, they will get Braille assistance. They also have assistive technology assistance, so they can learn how to use their assistive technology. And then there's some just assisted living kinds of strategies for folks who are just everyday living, you know, orientation, mobility, that services that the adults need.
Would it be safe to say, in your opinion, that you're never too old to learn?
You're never too old to learn. You're always learning every day. How do you want to apply it? You're learning something, so you might as well apply it in the direction you want it to go.
Do you think our educators have enough resources or the right kinds of resources to meet the need for the visually impaired and for the hearing impaired at this stage? Or are there still a number of things that we could do?
There are a number of things we can do. Technology is something that's really, really needed. You know, at the Wilson School, they don't have one-to-one. They don't have enough iPads and computers for each of the students. They also don't have the interactive boards in the classrooms for the teachers. At the Governor Moorhead School, the teachers don't have the interactive boards as well. They don't have enough Braille displays, and it takes so long to get Braille displays. Our procurement process is really long. We need to make sure all the students have the Braille displays. That's where the dots on the Braille display will refresh as they go over a page electronically. So it hooks into a computer, and so the student can actually read the Braille from what's online on their screen, and they can determine, you know, how they want to scan the page and do other things. And the more cells you have, the more you can actually read what's on the page at one time. And so I think it's about 40 cells is maybe about a line, whereas 18 cells is maybe a quarter of a line. And so if you think about how long, when we look at something and we see the page, we can kind of scan the whole page.
Right.
But when they are using the refreshable Braille display, they just get a chunk. You know, one little tiny piece of it. So, mm-hmm. But it's fairly helpful because then it refreshes as they move down the line and down the screen and kind of see it. And we have refreshable Braille displays for some students, but every day they ask, can I get one? Where's mine? So we need more.
That's got to be both encouraging because of their interest and mm-hmm. frustrating because of the system, you might say, that mm-hmm. has to be gone through in order to get the equipment.
Yes, and then the cost. I mean, they're very expensive.
Is that right?
They are about $3,000 a piece.
Oh, my heavens.
Yes.
You take that for a whole classroom and to multiply it by several years of classrooms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, you can imagine. And then they break. Sometimes, it's, you know, when they're plugging in the cord, it may, you know, they may plug it in and the adapter may break or something like that. And so sometimes, because we have one where the student, we're not sure how it happened, but the adapter on the back where you actually plug the cord in is now, it fell into the machine itself. And so we have to get that fixed.
Well, that's just pushing the adapter in good and strong.
Yeah, good and strong.
Want to make sure that it was well sealed.
Want to make sure it's well sealed.
Yes. Oh, that's got to be a little frustrating.
So when they break, you know, it takes a while to get them fixed, and then the student's without as well. So we need to have enough for each child and then more. So that's something that is needed. And again, you know, the interactive board, I think, is a big thing. Magnification devices, software. I mean, there's just lots of software the students need. They're learning JAWS, but as software changes, gets updated, you know, you have to renew those licenses every year. Zoom text, they use that to make sure we blow up the screen print as far as we can. But, you know, as we upgrade to Windows 10, you know, the software has to change. You have to buy new software. So everything, there's an expense. And the General Assembly gives us money, but there's never enough money for equipment and for the things that we need for the students.
It's a special situation.
It's a special situation. Yeah. It really is.
This is sort of off in the corner a little mm-hmm. bit. Do you find or do you know, do we ever find legislators coming for a tour, coming to see the facilities and getting motivated a little bit more to try to help the budget?
There are some that have, but we need more. We need more of that. That's something that we need to work on, making sure they actually come on campus, they're very familiar with the campus, and that they know what we do for the students. And we also want DPI. We're part of DPI, but, you know, making sure that we have DPI come over so they can understand what we're doing there as well and that they can help us to advocate for those dollars. That's really important.
Would you like to see our listeners writing to their legislators and encouraging them?
I don't want to encourage that as a State Department person.
You can't really do that. Okay, you be quiet for just a moment. Folks, I think it would be great if everyone would be writing to their legislators and encourage them to pay even greater attention to the needs that the visually impaired and hearing impaired communities have. That okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You might want to add that procurement process, too, because it takes forever. It takes like 9 months to get anything.
9 months? Mm-hmm. My goodness.
Mm-hmm. Start to finish. Oh. It's crazy.
It probably has to fit the cycle, the budget cycle, the year and everything.
It's
just the paperwork.
It's the paperwork.
Mm. Well, maybe it'll get streamlined soon. That would be good. Are there any other things that you can maybe envision out in the future that might be coming along to help educators in their work with our students?
Well, one thing that we are doing this in the next couple of weeks is we're having what's called a high-tech O&M training on our campus. It's sponsored by the Perkins School for the Blind, and they're actually having it on our campus. And so with that training, the O&M specialists are going to learn how to use Blind Square, which is an app on their iPhone that they can use within their orientation and mobility training with the students. And part of that, they're going to have these eye beacons, which they're going to put around campus, and it actually helps to navigate inside the buildings, not just outside the building.
An eye beacon?
An eye beacon. And so it works with the Blind Square app, and so once you program it, when they're inside the building and they hit one of the beacon tells them where they are in the building and how to navigate that building. And so they have a display over at the North Carolina Museum of Science in Raleigh. So they have an example of how it's used in the library. But it would be great if we had them at the bus stations, at the train stations, at the mall, you know, just all across the United States of America, where blind persons could have this, the Blind Square app on their phone. They would be navigating, and then as they go into the mall, they know exactly where Sears is if they're trying to get to Sears, or where the bathroom is when they want to get to the bathroom, where the food court is when they want to get to the food court. Would be awesome.
You're not a person of small dreams, are
you? No. So this iBeacons were developed in Poland, and the company that developed them is trying to encourage nonprofits and other developers to use them in a creative way. And in other countries, some of these are around, but in the U.S., we don't have very many. My dream and my vision would be that it would be everywhere, and the blind and visually impaired persons could come to GMS campus, because we're going to have some beacons there, and we're going to hopefully offer some training to the folks out in the world, and they could come there and they could use them and they could learn how to navigate really well.
Is that display or program open to members of the visually impaired community?
Or is it
at this point educators only?
Right now we have the O&M training is going to take place November 21st and 22nd.
Okay.
So then the O&Ms from across, the ones that come to the training, will be able to train their students back in their districts.
Wonderful.
We hope to offer more trainings in the future, because it's limited, because you can only do a small number at a time. And then GMS campus is going to be called, it's going to be have a Blind Square event is what they call it. So they're going to actually have it open, and we're going to purchase some beacons so that we can have the beacons there, so that people who have the Blind Square app, when they're on campus, it will work on our campus.
Oh,
so
that's
that'll
great.
Be really nice.
Yeah, that's going to be super.
So we're very, very excited about that.
It's going to be super.
Mm-hmm.
What comments would you have about how visual impairment affects somebody when they're trying to pursue an education?
Okay.
What kind of impact does it have on them? Conflicts, emotional structure, the things that might be barriers that they have to overcome, and ways that your educators can help them.
Okay. One thing that we found is that some persons with this visual impairment, especially if they lose their sight at an older age, they have a difficult time embracing it. And so they don't want to learn Braille. They don't want to learn other things. They don't want to embrace it. And so I think embracing...
Are we talking adulthood or
this is
even
high school age?
Yeah, okay.
And so I think one thing that we work with students on is making sure they embrace who they are and that they know we give them confidence that they can do whatever they want to do. They just have to do it a little bit differently. And so they have to learn the skills in order to kind of navigate that world. And I can imagine if you're even older than a high school student, that can be very difficult as well. The other thing that I see is if you have a little bit of sight, trying to use your sight can slow you down. If you learn to use the Braille and maybe JAWS, you could go a little bit faster and further. So at the beginning, you may not be able to because you've got your little bit of sight. But if you're constantly having to hold your iPad to your face and you can't really see the buttons to push, it's probably better for you to be able to have really strong keyboarding skills and learn JAWS so that you can just really go as fast as you can with that skill, because your eyes will tire and you can't read for long periods of time. And so embracing that, yes, I have a visual impairment. There are different tools that I need in order to be successful, and I just need to learn those tools and those skills. Embracing, I think, is really important. So I think that's the first thing that I would say, is making sure you embrace who you are, you know, what some of the limitations are in some areas. And then the other thing is to be resourceful and understand that there are resources for you. Take advantage of those so that you can be resourceful in other areas. So maybe you can't see it as far, but if you have the keyboarding skills that you need and you have the JAWS skills that you need with the screen reader, you're going to be just fine.
And that applies equally well to the young folks and folks who have not had that opportunity when they were younger, mm-hmm. and now they're older, or they've lost their vision, mm-hmm. as an adult.
Right. But it's not the end. I mean, it's the beginning of a new opportunity, and there are resources and there are people that are going to support you, and you can learn new things.
In the technology age, technology is your friend.
That's right. That's right. It's just like if you have, I have glasses. Mm-hmm. And so if I didn't wear my glasses, I would not be able to see. Now I can function, but I don't function as well. And I can't go as fast and I can't go as far. And so I had to embrace the fact that I couldn't see and that I had to wear glasses. You know, at a young age, back in the day, they would call you four eyes and all kinds of other things.
Yes, just for I recall.
But you have to embrace, you know, I wear glasses and it's a tool that I need in order to be successful. I just got to do it.
We're kind of coming to our close, Sarah. As a sighted person, how would you define success for you? And do you think it is any different for someone who is visually impaired?
I think for success for me is finding your passion and being able to pursue that passion and being able to do it every single day. And I think for a visually impaired person, it should be the same thing. If you're passionate about books, find a way that you can be around books every single day and be successful. If you're passionate about children or students, do the same thing. So I think success for me is being passionate about something and being able to pursue that on a daily basis.
We're all the same.
We're all the same.
We just go about things a little bit differently.
Just go about it differently.
But we're in the end, we're all the same.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's great. Sarah, thank you very, very much. We really appreciate your being here today and sharing your thoughts with us about education and how to reach out to particularly our young people, mm-hmm. but even so to the adults as well, so that they can enjoy their lives and have even more success.
Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed being here.
We hope that you have enjoyed today's program and found something in it that can be beneficial to you or someone you know. It's never too soon or too late to connect to your success. Be sure to tune in again on the third Tuesday of the month at 2:30 p.m. This program is rebroadcast as noted in the TRRS program guide and is available as a podcast at our website, www.triangleReadingService.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call TRRS at 919-832-5138. I'm Dick Hayden for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. So long until next time. We'll be right back.